welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We do stream live at those times at richarddugan.com. We archive the podcasts at the radio show's page of richarddugan.com, as well as SoundCloud and iTunes. We're on Facebook. We are on Twitter. I think that's about everything. The list is short, but it's sweet. And we are so thankful for you participating in this broadcast by listening. If you'd like to help us out, support this broadcast in a financial fashion, that would be greatly appreciated. We do have a link on the missions page. You can read about what we're all about if you haven't listened to our programs before or much. Find out why we're doing what we're doing. I think it's a very important reason why we're doing it. And if you'd like to help us out, we can use all the help we can get. I've been self-funding this program for over 10 years, and you know, it hadn't been bad, and we're not saying, hey, if we don't get help, we're going to go off the air. No. Not going to play that card. I don't own that card. Don't want that card. If I can't afford it, it's gone. But I can right now, but I could always use some your help. And if you like what we're doing, you'd like to support it, we are grateful for your support. We'll take any other energetic support as well. Prayers, thoughts, good feelings, ideas for guests. Always looking for great guests who are making a difference in the world in which we live. Today is no exception, and today we're going to be talking about how to create life-changing connection, trust, and impact in your business and life. We're going to be dealing with, boy, wouldn't I like to have this in my bank account? $1 million influence. And my guest is Aaron Keith Hawkins, who I actually came in contact with on a website I'm finding more and more beneficial for this radio broadcast, and that's LinkedIn. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program, Aaron. It's great to have you with us.
Richard, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it, my friend.
You know, what I find interesting is the synchronicity with which these interviews happen, because it's just recently, prior to this conversation, that I'm going through all of my worldly possessions. No kidding. I'm going through a couple of file cabinets that I happen to have of files that I've had for probably 40 or more years. Okay. I kid you not, I still have the eighth grade, Aaron, yearbook. Okay. Wow. That's not a big thing. It's just, it's like construction paper on the front and the back, and sure, and so forth and so on. And then I came across a folder that I labeled awards, and it contains some things that I, certificates that I received in grade school. And then I didn't even know this, that I actually made it into the Honor Society in my senior year. I don't remember ever doing that. I honestly don't.
Rich, you know, that's when you're doing good. When you're getting awards, you didn't even realize you got. That's pretty impressive.
Well, I tell you. And then I started going through some of the other things. I have numerous certificates of merit for I was a paperboy in my eighth grade and all through high school.
Okay.
Great salesman. I mean, I was going on trips to Disneyland every spring and summer, it seemed like, and it was great fun. And also getting all kinds of other neat gifts and this and that and the other. And then I came across some stuff from my work experience. Oh, I even came across my three semesters of junior college report cards, which weren't bad. Nice. I was a C, maybe a little higher than a C average student.
Okay.
But I came across one that was real interesting, and this ties into what we're going to be talking about today. I worked for a company here in Santa Barbara when I moved here because I needed work. Mm-hmm. And they're no longer in business, so I can reference them, called Bargain Network. And what they offered for a monthly subscription of $29.95 was initially a booklet that you would get every month that listed, at that time, I believe it was cars, kind of like Auto Trader, but supposedly the deals in this particular book were better than that, right? And then, of course, they expanded into homes. And I came across a printout, an Excel spreadsheet of the, what do you want to call it? The progress, if you will, over the course of a almost five-month period in 2007? Yeah. I think it was 2007, because I left on the 13th or 14th of May of 2007, to go to work for a TV station.
Okay.
Anyway, I was looking through this, and then I came across a spreadsheet that was specifically mine. Okay, it was just breaking down all of my numbers. Now, the way they had it set up, when you reached a certain level of sales, they put you in this special room. I think they called it the green room. It was like a fishbowl. And it was raised up another 6 feet above, not feet, 12 inches above the rest of the room. So you kind of had a view of the rest of the sales room.
Right.
You got lunch served. I mean, you got a lot of perks in that room. And as long as you kept your sales up, you got to stay in that room. And for the last 3 weeks that I was there, I was in that room.
Nice.
And I was looking at these numbers, and the one column that was real interesting was the hourly rate, and it would change depending upon your sales. Mm-hmm. Now, you did get a flat minimum wage, but then, of course, you got that added bonus of the hourly rate. And what I noticed was I was averaging – this is back in 2007, mind you. I was averaging probably $20 an hour.
Okay.
Hated the job. Absolutely hated it. And yet the numbers showed I was really good at it. Which meant that I had some level of, if I'm correct, I had some level of influence on the people who were calling in. Thank God it wasn't cold calling. It was inbound.
Okay.
And so I was pretty darn successful and hated it. And I remember my father's phrase, and I want you to jump in here and expand on my experience, but also how this weaves into this whole aspect of Million Dollar Influence, which is the book we're talking about. My father said to me when I called him about this job and my nervousness about doing it, he says, "Richard, you could sell ice cubes to Eskimos." Okay?
Yeah.
And I wonder sometimes if we, for whatever reason, we don't see, we can't see from an objective perspective our own abilities, capabilities, capacity for success, not just financial, but success in a general sense as well. But financial would be nice as well. Is that a true statement? And is that really maybe where I was at, that I just couldn't see it because, I don't know, for whatever the reasons are?
Yeah, you know what? It's a perfect it's a great segue in, and I appreciate the story because it is so relevant to this topic of influence. You know, what you said is correct. Most people, in my experience as well, over my decades of a few different types of work experience, most people aren't really paying attention to the impact that they're having, or should I say the influence that they're having on other people. And it's actually it's one of the biggest common mistakes. Actually, I've listed out in my book is the number one mistake, the number one reason why people tend to fail in influence is because they're just not paying attention to the fact that everything they say, everything they do is influence. It's not something we can turn on and off. So, and it's funny because in that story that you're talking about, when you're dealing with inbound sales and you got to take the calls and it's your job to close it. If you're not aware of what you're doing, really, it just kind of falls back to the habits that you've developed up to that point, right? So, you know, if you're pretty good at the gift of gab, which it sounds like your dad is claiming you were, and you're able to get your point across and probably are able to convince people why what you have is going to benefit them, then you're going to do well, and you're going to be sitting on that elevated platform like you were. So it sounds like you got pretty good at that, if you weren't totally aware at the time.
Right. By the way, speaking of a gift of gab, a lot of people think that if you go to Ireland, you go to County Cork, you go to the castle where the Blarney Stone is, people often say, well, you know, if you kiss that, it'll give you the gift of gab. Well, you better read the plaque a little more closely. It doesn't say you get the gift of gab. There's a gift of gab. That's nothing. It says that it gives you the gift of eloquence. Eloquence.
I like that.
Now, there's a big difference between gab and eloquence, isn't there?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk about this concept of influence. Now, we have been, I'm going to use the term bombarded by, for the last almost 2 years and maybe longer than that, with the, I don't even know how to put this. And I'm using this term very loosely because I have to say that maybe I shouldn't use it loosely because we have been influenced by this one individual who now resides on the East Coast and has been saying stuff in all different formats to all different kinds of people in all different kinds of ways that either rub people the right way or the wrong way.
Sure.
And it seems like mostly the wrong way, but hey, you know, we don't hear too much about the right way. And I'm sitting here thinking, isn't the phrase when it comes to influence that you can catch more flies with honey than vinegar?
Sure.
And yet what
sure.
we're getting is a lot of, I mean, extremely caustic, acidic diatribe, if you will, in social media, in the news media, in whatever format you want. And I have to say, I'm really worn out about with all of that. And I don't want to specifically focus on that individual, but I want to talk about this whole dynamic. Is that really the kind of influence that, you know, because it seems like that's supposedly the way they say that it's supposed to be done in business and in politics and in this place and that place and the other. And I'm thinking, is that the reason why we haven't progressed far?
I tell you what, I get your message, and I have to agree with you. There's plenty of history of questionable types of influence coming from, you know, all coasts of of this nation,
right.
and all nations.
Right.
And I will say this, and your point is very valid, and it actually kind of circles back to what I was saying earlier. About the fact that a lot of times we're not really noticing the type of influence that we're having on the people around us, especially based on our platform, because obviously the more people that have their eyes and ears on us, the greater our potential to reach other people. So then it comes down to, okay, if influence is always happening, whether or not we're paying attention to it, really by definition, influence is simply our capacity to have the effect on the character, the development and behavior of somebody else, someone other than us. At least that's the outgoing influence, because the internal influence is a whole nother conversation. That being said, what it really boils down to, and the reason that I love the topic of influence, because for me, I love sharing my perspectives on influence, because then people can take what I have to share and they can either listen or not. But if they at least buy into my perspective on how you can develop your influence better, the question just becomes, what type of influence do you want to have? And that's when it just comes down to choice. And that comes down to priorities, which comes down to values. And, you know, that's when the focus on the individual and what somebody's intentions are, what their most important intention are, comes to the forefront. Some people's intentions with their influence, because we all have influence, it's just a matter of, are we paying attention to how we're wielding it, and is it getting us the results that we want? We're always influencing. Whether or not you ever read a book about influence or listen to somebody talk about influence, it's irrelevant. We are influencing from the top of our, you know, nation down to, you know, the person that, you know, you rub elbows with day to day. We're all influencing each other. It really comes down to, what is the influence that you're trying to have, and how are we developing other people's character and their behavior by their contact with us?
How important is the concept? I'm going to use that term right now. The concept of, and we've talked about this on this program ad nauseum, if you will, from some people's perspectives, the power of words.
Depends on the context. Really, the power of words is obviously words are extremely powerful. And I say it depends on the context, because obviously if somebody's listening to a show like this, which is completely just audio, then the words are what they are. They're all we have that the listener has to work with. If it's a different venue where somebody's seeing and or interacting with you, then you have other things. You have body language, energy, et cetera. But the choice of words that we use and how we use them, that's definitely makes a huge difference. I've certainly been guilty of it before, where I've been, let's just say, to put it politely, I've been accused of saying something that where the words weren't exactly the wrong words. It was the way the delivery happened.
Ah.
And, you know, there's a huge difference between telling somebody, you know, oh, you made a mistake, or, oh, you're wrong. And depending on how we deliver that same message, it's going to have a much very different impact. So to your point, Richard, absolutely, the words play a huge role, not just the linguistic words themselves, but the way they're delivered. That makes a huge difference. I can attest to that. After 22 years of marriage, I've made more mistakes than I can keep track of, but I've gotten a lot better, but we've all been there. We've done that. And if we're honest with ourselves, we know that the way, not only the words that we say, but the way we deliver them, it makes a difference. And if when we're in those honest moments, we know that when we deliver a message, we're choosing how it's received. Now, whether or not we're trying to build in an excuse by saying the correct words as on paper is one thing, but I think most of, I'm sure your listeners, Richard, are intelligent enough to know that, yeah, the words we choose and the way we deliver them, especially at second half, the way we deliver our words makes a big difference.
Yeah, and it's one of those aspects that I hear about. Now, the two areas specifically that I can actually think about in terms of all of this are business and politics, okay?
Sure.
And again, not getting into real specifics here, but one of the things that just, well, maybe it's reason part of the reason my blood pressure is a little high these days. I hear about a negotiation tactic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that tactic goes kind of like this. You ask for the moon. You don't want the moon, okay? You just want the upper atmosphere of the earth. That's all you want. But you ask for the moon, and then you start to, as they say, haggle. And you work your way down to where you eventually get that which you wanted. And this could take days, could take weeks. This could have to do with two countries trying to resolve. You take a look at the Israeli-Palestinian issue. That's been going on for thousands of years. You know, you wonder, maybe that's their business to be, you know, at odds. That, you know, maybe they're not supposed to solve the problem because their job is to be at odds with one another. Who knows, you know?
Sure.
Maybe they get paid more. Because if they solve the problem, what would they have to argue about? And the case is also the same in business. It's the same in politics. You ask for the moon, and then you work your way down. I'm going, but that wastes so much time.
Sure.
It wastes so much potential. Why can't we just come straight out and say, look, as I said at the front end of this program to our listeners, I say this to you, I say this to everybody that's listening. We could sure use your help financially for this broadcast. Whatever you can support us with, we would love that, okay? Energetic, we'll take, you know, I'm a Reiki master. We'll take Reiki energy for the program. Maybe that'll help. I'm just being straight. I'm not trying to say, hey, you know, I'm gonna finesse this and I'm going to do all of those kinds of things. Why? And this goes back to the whole concept again of the power of words. And then you threw in that second dynamic, which is extremely important. That is intent.
Sure.
What's wrong with just saying what you really want? Why is that aspect of it? Because it seems to me when you talk about influence, I mean, you've already influenced me just by virtue of this conversation, and I'm sure vice versa to some degree.
Sure.
Why can't we just come straight out and be honest with one another and just say it like it really is instead of playing the game?
Sure. I think you, in a certain way, Richard, you kind of snuck in my opinion of what the answer is during your conversation, which you use the word intent. Those tactics like you're talking about, you know, shooting high when really your goal is to, you know, if we use a sales example, you know, telling somebody that the price for something is X amount of dollars when really, you know, you'll take, you know, instead of it's 10,000, but you know, you'll take 7, which is what you really want. But it really comes down to intent, because it depends on whether your intention is just flat out honesty, or if there's a slight priority towards getting what you want. Mm-hmm. And that's a value-based question. And it's certainly something anybody here that has, probably everyone here has either been on one side of the sales equation or the other. Either you're someone has been in sales and they've been taught these tactics or used them themselves, or been on the receiving end of it and have had to play that game. It's one of the reasons I could never stand going to buy a car. Although it's gotten a lot better, though, I have to say, I have to be honest, I've been really fortunate to meet with some really straight up car dealers lately for the past few years for some reason. But anyway, it really comes down to the intent, Richard.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people. I do sales. I'm in business. I'm an entrepreneur. You know, I do keynote speaking and people hire me for coaching and that kind of thing. And eventually, in that business, it comes down to I have to have sales conversations, whether it's, you know, with a potential client that wants me for a conference or with a potential buyer who's thinking about buying an electronic, you know, like an online course or something I have for sale. Mm-hmm. And especially I'll use the example in the online marketing space. I've seen so many of these free trainings, I'm using air quotes here, that offer you know, this free training, and they'll talk about themselves for 45 minutes. They'll teach you something for 5 minutes, and then they offer this thing for sale. And they'll start out at saying, you know, this product is $3,000. And then within a 30-second rant, come to find out it's your lucky day because now it's $300.
Yeah.
And you and I both know that, you know, the price they're probably happy getting is $200, because if you don't buy it that day, you'll probably get an email a week later saying, hey, guess what? You're really lucky now because I knocked the price down to $200 because you didn't buy it for $300. And I don't say that to be judgmental of anyone's sales tactics. Look, people can do what they want with sales and you know, I certainly have sales strategies, but it comes down to the intent. Is your purpose to give something something that you actually think is going to benefit them, whether it's a product or service, or is your purpose to manipulate this person and be clever so they'll part with your money because you were able to fast talk them into thinking that they were getting a phenomenal deal when all you really did was lie about the original price in the first place?
Yeah.
That is a very personal and value-based question. I have my limitations on it. I have no problem telling somebody what I think something is worth, or doing a price comparison or juxtaposition with, you know, a similar product or service, and explain my price and why I think it's extremely fair and it's a good deal, and, you know, make sure somebody knows what value they can plan on getting from it. Mm-hmm. I have to be able to sleep at night. There are plenty of sales tactics that I think are, you know, I just think they're smart, and then there's some that I just think are flat out not something I'm willing to engage in.
Yeah.
But Rich, like you said, it's intent, mm-hmm. and that to me is more important than a tactic. Yeah. As long as the person's being honest with themselves, I think the intent is the most important thing.
I think one of the hardest things for me in dealing with the concept of sales, only because we've been sort of talking about that a bit here at the front end of the program. My difficulty was for the longest time about trying to convince somebody to buy something from me, whether it was the radio program, whether it was a newspaper. I have to say that I was very successful at selling subscriptions to the newspaper. Very successful, as I mentioned earlier. And what's real interesting is at one point, one night, I wasn't doing really good. And I'd had those nights before, but I don't know what had gotten into my head. And one person, I went and here's the real kicker. It was in the very apartment complex that I was actually delivering every day to, which meant that this person was going to see me every day after this encounter. I kid you not. I walked up, knocked on the door. The guy just wasn't having it. He didn't want the paper. Mm-hmm. I kid you not. I began to beg.
Wow.
And when I was done, I walked away and felt like garbage.
Yeah.
And it was like, and I look back at that experience going, why did you do that? You have the certificates of merit showing how successful you are. You have the trips that you went on showing how successful. One customer said no to you and you caved.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and so I know that we do that. And I have to say that when I first started in this business of radio, and I was doing little projects for people, they would come to me with all their cassettes and their records. And so, hey, I want to put together this program for the radio station, for the program, for our broadcast. I said, well, did you time anything out? I said, well, no. I said, okay, well, that's fine. And what will you charge me? And I would say, well, and I knew they didn't have a lot of money. I mean, we're talking about a religious station. We're talking about local ministers and pastors. They don't have a ton of money.
Yeah.
You know, I never got a chance to do anything for the Crystal Cathedral or anything like that. But I used to tell people that I would do these projects for other folks, you know, for, you know, small amounts. And they would say, well, but Richard, you're underselling yourself. Mm-hmm. And I would say, well, I understand what you're saying. And yes, I would love to charge. Maybe at that time I could have charged $25 or $30 or $35 an hour, you know, but I was still learning. And I said, I would rather do the project, the job, for the little that I get from them than not do the job at all because they can't afford my rate.
Yeah.
Plus, I was also going to get the experience and the contact, the relationship. And that was where I was headed as far as sales. I remember being told the whole point of sales was to establish a relationship. My problem was in establishing a relationship with someone for what I perceived as disingenuous intention. I'm, you know, Aaron, I'd like to chat with you. Hey, let's get together for lunch and talk about this, that, and the other thing, blah, blah, blah. But in the back of my mind, it's like, let's see, how can I get Aaron to fork over $100,000 for this venture that I'm working on?
Sure.
And yet, you know, and I'm lying to you about just wanting to, hey, you're a nice guy. I like, let's just have a nice conversation, talk about the wife, the kids, you know, vacation, blah, blah, blah. And all the while in the back of my head, it's, I got to close this deal.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of influence that I'm trying to wrap my brain around and say, you know, that doesn't, because if things go south, go sour or anything, what have you done?
Yeah. You're absolutely correct. It's funny you bring up the topic of having lunch or the veiled attempt at sharing lunch, and then it turns into a sales conversation. It's funny, it happened to me with an old friend of mine, somebody I went to actually grade school with, and we ran into each other randomly years later. And he says, you know what, we got to get together and let's just have a coffee and sit down and catch up. And that's what we did. And sure, I did not see it coming. 20 minutes into the conversation, it turned to his business and him trying to get into, basically he was working for an investment company. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to start talking investment, but it was so ham-fisted. And I got to be honest, it put me off. Like, totally. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
And it stung. And it really, I think the point of talking about how hurtful those things can be is because one of the most important things when it comes to, if we're going to have sincere, like the positive type of influence that we're looking to create here with this conversation, with this kind of show that you have, Rich, if we're going to have positive influence on someone, the number one thing we absolutely must make the top priority, if nothing else, is the person you're dealing with has to feel safe. Because once you lose the safe factor, and it becomes apparent that this is just a manipulation game, it's over. I mean, it was certainly over for me that day. And this guy was, you know, I won't call him a close friend, but he was an acquaintance of mine. He was somebody I felt like I knew personally. And from that moment on, I didn't trust his intentions at all. Like, everything he asked about my family and kids, it just went out the window. Yeah. I'm like, you just brought me out here trying to make a sale.
Yeah.
And it was hurtful. And I bring that up not because that, you know, we can't have conversations or have a coffee with somebody to talk about finances, but at least make it known. Mm-hmm. If you would have said, hey, you know, let's catch up and stuff. I'll tell you about my business. I've been working for this company. And look, if you're looking for somebody to manage your finances, we can have that conversation too. But I just want to see how you've been. Mm-hmm. At least then it would be generous, because reality was both things were probably true. A, he probably wanted to catch up because we were good buddies years ago.
Yeah.
And B, he also had the intention of, hey, if it fit, he'd be happy to help me out with my finances. If I would have been told that up front, I wouldn't have cared at all when we talked about the fight. I would have still said yes. I would have still went and had coffee with him, but at least I wouldn't have felt like that I had the wool pulled over my eyes.
Yeah.
And when it comes to influence, especially in business, and it goes with personal relationships too, if somebody doesn't feel safe with you, you've lost.
Yeah.
Because until you get the trust factor back, you're going to be spinning your wheels.
Yeah. Million Dollar Influence is the title of the book, How to Create Life-Changing Connections, Trust, and Impact in your business and life. Not just business, but life as well. Aaron Keith Hawkins is my guest, and we're going to continue our conversation here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for staying with us as we continue talking with Aaron Keith Hawkins and his book. His book is entitled, basically, Million Dollar Influence, How to Create a Life-Changing Connection, Trust, and Impact in Your Business and Life. And this is some fascinating stuff. And of course, his website, folks, is AaronKeithHawkins.com. We encourage you to go there. We will be linked to his website so that you can get more information. Your keynote speaker, your high performance coach, host, you have your own radio program, if you will, or podcast, Unbreakable Success, which I think, as we've been talking, it can be broken. Your success can be broken, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. Also, you are also, it says here, a decorated law enforcement executive.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I've been a police officer since 1995. I'm just a few months away from retirement at the rank of captain, and it's been my day job, really, for the past 20-some-odd years, and the whole entrepreneurial world, the coaching and the speaking and all that, that started for me about a decade ago. But it's been fun, albeit extremely busy having my feet in both worlds, but it's certainly been rewarding. And I got to thank my family for putting up with it for all these years. And I shouldn't even say putting up with it. They've been massively supportive for years. So thanks to my wife and daughter.
Well, that's fantastic. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that in terms of what we've been discussing here. I want to overlay that with the current perception across the country, but obviously in certain pockets of the country, perception by certain segments of the population of law enforcement, and how you have handled that over the years, especially the last 5 or 10 years, because it seems as though relationships between law enforcement and citizenry are in some areas, they're kind of strained. I mean, to the point where you guys in blue, you're going out there, you don't know if you're coming back. And it may be over something really innocuous, and there are people that are angry and they're really pissed off and so on. So how do you incorporate this concept of influence, whether it be million dollar or whatever, however you want to phrase it, and your coaching skills, how do you incorporate that into this line of hazardous work that you've chosen.
Yeah, I got to be honest. It's funny. I've had a lot of people ask me how I've managed to be this laid back, sort of just very empathetic guy. Really, like I truly care about people. Coming from that profession, where you know it's our job to, in many cases, deal with people on their worst day. But the one has certainly helped the other. I mean, I ran some numbers over the course of my career. I think I've been involved, my agency at least has been involved in close to 1 million calls for service over the years. So there's been plenty of real life situations to kind of learn about both myself and human behavior and all that kind of thing. And the one has helped the other. But I honestly, I've handled it just by being patient. I was fortunate. I was raised by phenomenal parents. I always had a strong circle of friends around me that all of us pretty much had some pretty level heads, not as level back in our late teens and early 20s, but we were young guys.
Yeah.
But I always managed to have good people around me that kind of wanted the same thing. So when I got into this profession, even back then in the 90s, the mid 90s, I swore to myself and everyone else that I wasn't going to let it change me. I wasn't going to become Aaron, the police officer. I was going to stay Aaron, and being a police officer was going to be my chosen profession. And I kind of stuck with that. But it has been interesting over the years, for those of us been around long enough to, you know, remember when 9/11 happened. After that tragedy, the police and fire and anybody that had a light and siren on their car, they were hailed as heroes. And then fast forward a little bit when some other things started happening in our country, the tide kind of shifted, so to speak, in the media. And you know what? I think there's truth to both situations. Yes, I've been around thousands of law enforcement and emergency service personnel through the course of my career. And there's been some amazing people that I've met. I've been humbled to, you know, make their acquaintance. And also during the past 20 something years, I've seen things happen that made me shake my head and quite frankly, get extremely angry about, because I know based on the nature of my profession, someone else is going to judge me because of what they saw in the news, which also isn't right.
Yeah.
So it's been a balance, and it's been very humbling. But more than anything, it's honestly been rewarding. I remember shortly after Ferguson happened a few years ago, and that was the topic of most of the news on the mainstream media. I remember in our local community, there was an organization that wanted to put together a panel to talk about those issues. And long story short, I got volunteered by our director of public safety to be the face of the agency. And to be honest, I shouldn't say I was scared, but I was really anxious about going to this thing and being the representative of the local law enforcement agency, because I assumed, because it was going to be a Q&A type of thing where they were going to take questions from the public.
Yeah.
That the panel was going to have to answer. And on that panel, it wasn't just police officers on the panel. It was me. It was some judges, some people from like probation and basically local officials. But it turned out, to my surprise, that day at this event that was supposed to be an event to deal with these many questions that the public had about our police procedure and policy and all that kind of thing, I'd never been thanked so much in my life for doing this job in a say 2 to 3 hour window.
Wow.
And that was an eye opener for me, that my assumption that I was going to be treated negatively just because of the reason that the event was happening.
Yeah.
I assumed the worst, and it turned out to be one of the most gracious days I've ever experienced in, you know, wearing a uniform. So, that was a lesson in and of itself, to not make assumptions. As innocent as my assumption may have seemed at the time, I made an assumption that I was going to be treated negatively, and it flat out wasn't true.
Yeah. I know, too, that when I step out the door, I have to remind myself, and I've done this with the other stations that I've worked for, or even, again, the companies, no matter how much I disliked the job I was doing, that, you know, and in this, because the arena that I'm in is a little more high profile than some other jobs I've had, because I've worked in a warehouse and, of course, again, Bargain Network and so forth. I have to be careful because I'm a representative of that company that I'm working for. And sometimes people do hear me and they associate the voice with the face. And, you know, so you do have to, you know, you have to be careful. You're the same way, only in a bigger way. You're representing the city. You're representing city government, you know, the police force at large, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, and so you have to really, you've got to be living a life way above reproach as well. So there's no question. And I think that maybe each one of us needs to start taking a look at how we are, shall we say, representing ourselves and the group at large that we are a member of, the human race, you know. You talk about, and this, I'm glad that you put this at the front of your book. I like this because it's, I think it's extremely important. You dedicate this to your father, John Hawkins, and you wish you could have had the opportunity to feel the power of his handshake and the genuineness in his smile. He would have loved you. Tell me about that relationship that, obviously, it sounds to me like it didn't come to pass, but still, apparently, has had quite, if I may use the phrase, quite an influence on you and your life today.
Yeah, that note in the beginning of the book is actually written to the reader to tell them that, you know, dear reader, essentially, I wish you had a chance to meet my father, who I'm dedicating this book to. Because I do. I wish everybody who has the opportunity to read my book, I wish they would have had the opportunity to meet my father, see his smile, and feel his handshake. Because he was one of the most genuine people I'd met. He was a huge influence on my life personally. And he passed away back in the early 90s, actually the year before I started my law enforcement career. But he was he's a big part of the reason that I am who I am today. He certainly is a big reason. He's behind, in many ways, a lot of what I write about in this book, a lot of what I experienced, a lot of what, when it comes to the person I wanted to be, a lot of it was due to him. Not because he was perfect, but he was just a genuine guy. Yeah. And he was big. Everybody called him Big John. He had this powerful handshake, this powerful voice, but behind it all, he was this gentle giant. And I always admired that about him. But years after he passed, I just kept meeting people who would see me, because we looked a lot alike, and I would see people out and about, and I'd be out shopping. Sometimes I'd be at work in my police uniform, and people would walk up to me and say, you're John Hawkins' son, aren't you? And I'd say, yeah. And they would shake my hand, and they would talk about how much they loved my dad and how well he treated him. He was in real estate locally years ago. And so many people, I didn't realize how many houses he sold, because so many of these people said, your dad sold me, my family, our house. But they talked about his character.
Yeah.
They always talked about how he treated them. And that meant a lot to me. And that really put in the forefront of my mind as I grew up, because he passed away when I was 20 years old still.
Mm.
But having lost him and then having people follow up with me later to talk about how much they admired the person he was, it kind of helped me remember that at the end of the day, sure, there's tons of things I want to accomplish in my life and my career and things of that nature, but we're only going to be remembered by the person that we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's not many eulogies that talk about the car that's in the driveway, or, you know, oh, we're going to miss so-and-so. He had so much money. Now that money may make life a little bit more stress-free in some ways as you're alive, but it's certainly not going to be the thing that people honor about you both in life and after you're gone. So
yeah,
that was important to me.
Yeah. I'm fortunate in that respect because my father's still alive. He's 87 this year.
God bless.
And still going strong. He commented to me the other day when I talked to him. He says, I said, how you guys doing? He said, oh, yeah, we're still going to the gym and doing our thing. I said, so are you and Mom going to be on America's Got Talent here in the near future? He said, no, you won't be seeing us there. No, no. But, you know, he's still, you know, he's got a little challenge with his stability, but he's still moving around and having a great time. Matter of fact, I was there this past Easter, and I got a chance to visit with them for a little while. They were taking care of their great grandson, little kid. Nice. And they looked worn out. And it was because of this kid. That was not just, yeah. You know, I even told my dad, I said, Dad, you know, you can say no. He said, hey, I know. And I even offered to step in and maybe talk to one of the sisters. Don't you dare, boy. You just leave it alone. You don't want to get in the middle of that. And I said, okay.
Yep.
Had enough of those with my four sisters back when I was still living at home in my teens. But it is incredible. And the influences that we have on people, but the people have had on us.
Yeah.
And I remember this was during one of the political campaigns, maybe early 2000s, could have been the 1990s or something in that decade. And I remember all these people were up in arms. They were entrepreneurs and they were basically saying, I did it myself. I did it myself. And I'm going, you're an idiot. You didn't do it yourself. There is no way anybody can do anything themselves. Yeah. Nothing is created out of a vacuum. Even if you consider your customers, without your customers, you'd have nothing. In addition to all of the people who influenced you to go into this particular entrepreneurial venture and so forth. And I think that that's one of the big keys that keeps me humble. I found that interesting. Thank God I haven't had it happen a lot, getting too big for my britches. And the universe has a way of humbling me. I get my comeuppance somewhere along the way. And it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, sorry.
We all do.
Yeah. And I just have to remind myself there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people that I am beholden to over my almost 40-year career in broadcasting that I wouldn't be where I am today sitting here talking with you, including you, if it weren't for those influences. I want to just race through a little bit of some of what you have in your book here. You talk about a lot of different things, obviously, in terms of one chapter about talking about the rest of your life. You also have a trilogy of human needs, which I found real interesting. And I'm just going to go through the three: survival, self-awareness, and then there's the transcendent needs. And that's broken down into several different categories. You also have in here the top four reasons people fail. You actually mentioned one of those earlier in the program, lack of generosity. Now, let's in the last portion of this program, because we only have a few minutes left, I've often heard it said, and this was more coming from my experiences and when I was working for the Christian station back in Phoenix in the 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. They always talked about a couple of things. One was, you know, cast your bread upon the water, you know, and you put it out there and it's going to come back to you 1,000, maybe 10,000 fold. So then you're kind of looking for a return on your investment, so to speak.
Sure.
But there was another element that I thought was so interesting having to do with tithing. And it wasn't just specifically 10%. It was about giving. And that in some instances, the more that you gave, the more that you, and this is more of a universal law. It wasn't a math equation here. The more you would get back, but it wouldn't necessarily come back in, you know, at 5 or 10 or 20% return on your financial investment to that particular charitable organization. It could be in relationship. It could be in a number of different ways. Let's talk a little bit about that in terms of this aspect of generosity and its influence on our success in changing our lives.
Sure, absolutely. Generosity is one of those things, and I like to be careful about the term generosity because it can be interpreted in a few different ways. Like you're mentioning about tithing and giving financially. We can talk about it in personal relationships where there could be a person that is either not giving enough or giving too much in their relationship, which could have different consequences. Same in business. We can't give away all our products and give away all our service for free because then we have a hobby instead of a business.
Right.
But the point to that that section in that chapter about the four reasons people fail at influence is because I think generosity, or certainly from my experience, generosity is one of those things that when people are struggling with their ability to influence someone else in business or life, a lot of times it can be due to a lack of generosity. Just use business, for example. You mentioned at the beginning of our talk today about LinkedIn and how it's been great for connecting with people and things of that nature. Certainly I've felt the same way, but it's interesting because inevitably I wind up getting people connecting with me and it's the immediate, hey, this is what I do and this is what I want you to buy, call me and I'll make your business better type of conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's almost like meeting someone for the first time and then planting a big wet kiss on your mouth and you don't even know them. It's just very off-putting. So to me, and I know I apologize for the crude example,
that's okay.
But that's just how it feels sometimes to get those messages. And I'm sure they're well-intentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're going to talk about intelligent influence, personally and professionally, there has to be an intention, again, to use that word again, an intention of authentic generosity.
Yeah.
So if that same person offering that same service in their business would have started that conversation with, you know, hey, I see this in your profile. See, this is what you do. Here's what, you know, my company does. It'd be great to chat or meet. And if this helps you, here's a free thing. I do it myself. I give my book away usually when I meet somebody on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there's no strings attached to it. I don't, you know, if people want a book, I give it to them for free. I just charge them shipping, but I give them a free copy of the digital book, no reservations at all.
Right.
Same thing in personal relationships. It can be real easy for us to think about what we want to get from a relationship, and that's absolutely essential in any relationship.
Yeah.
We need to be good. It's a give take thing, but a lot of times it's easier for people to miss the mark when they're so caught up for many understandable reasons that they're looking to get something, they need more income, they want a closer relationship. But if we forget that generosity is the key to someone feeling safe, and I know I brought that up earlier,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
People feel safer around people that they believe truly have their interests in mind. So if somebody's engaging in a personal relationship and they're just giving, not because they want to get something back, but they're just authentically a generous person,
right?
They're going to feel safe and they're going to be drawn to that person. Yeah. Same thing in business. We've all been there. We deal with a business that feels legit generous. It's refreshing, almost scary because you're not used to it.
Yeah. You know, we're running short on time here, and I've got a couple of quick things I need to bring up. And number one is your website. AaronKeithHawkins.com is the website for folks to go to. The book's titled Million Dollar Influence, How to Create Life-Changing Connection, Trust, and Impact in Your Business and Your Life. And we don't have time, unfortunately, to go into one of these wonderful aspects that I'm sure is an incredible story. I was going to start the interview, and I should have started off, what the heck happened in 2009? Don't answer that question, because we're going to have you back. We're going to have you back. But before we let you go, I need to, first of all, thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us, and we are going to have you back on the program. AaronKeithHawkins.com is the website. And three final quick questions for you before we let you go. First of all, who is Aaron Keith Hawkins?
Aaron Keith Hawkins is just an everyday guy who loves what he does for a living. I'm somebody who likes to help people clarify what it is they're doing, where they want to be, and kind of help them along the journey. That's what it felt like in many different ways in my career. So that's it.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
You know what? I hope to achieve helping other people recognize what they're capable of achieving.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Definitely to give. I definitely feel like my purpose is to show people that you can pretty much in most ways get exactly what you want to experience in life, personally and professionally, if you're willing to just help others achieve the same.
Hmm. Well, Aaron, I want to again thank you so much for taking so much time, and I encourage people to go to your website, AaronKeithHawkins.com, and that's Aaron with two A's, and again, Million Dollar Influence. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Richard. I appreciate you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.